Blog Talk Radio.
This is the UR Tennis Network. We are the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate tennis enthusiasts who promote our sport relentlessly. We strive continuously to bring news and information for players, parents, coaches, officials, businesses, and anyone else who loves tennis. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis may not be interested in them.
Introducing in the red corner, American Tennis! And introducing in the blue corner, your host for American Tennis, Mr. Chuck Creasy! Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to get in the game.
This is Coach Chuck Creasy, and it's another week, and we're here with American Tennis once again. And again, our mission with American Tennis is to get everybody that has any skin in the game to stand up and speak out and give your solutions each and every week. You have a platform now to talk about American Tennis. We are right at the tipping point. We are so close to being able to control our own destiny again with tennis. I always say this, but we have 91 women in the top 1,000 in the world. We have 74 men in the top 100 in the world, 1,000 in the world. But most of them are not getting past that 85th to 90th percentile, and we have some things that we need to figure out. And once again, we need everybody and anybody to stand up and to speak out. All that we ask is stay professional, address issues, not people. But we are the UR Tennis Network. If you want to call in, the phone number is 714-583-6853. That's 714-583-6853. My blog and my website is chuckcreasy.net. That's K-R-I-E-S-E, chuckcreasy.net. Check out my new program for T3Mentorship.com, T3Mentorship.com. I have a good friend up in Pittsburgh, Alex Slezak, has been helping me to get a website together there where I can get some mentoring tools out to all of you. So, UR Tennis Network and American Tennis, we have a very, very interesting show for you today. We have been, for the whole, all summer long and all fall long, I think we've had like nearly 40 shows already. We're not quite at the one-year mark, but we're usually talking about those issues that we need to try to propel American tennis forward, whether it's coaching, whether it's arguing and discussing whether the green ball is the right way to go. Last week I gave you what I felt were the 12 best solutions. Now, I want to preface this by saying to you as coaches as well, I know that each and every one of you who are in leadership believes this, that everybody in the world would want to be like me if only they knew how sometimes. And I say that sort of facetiously. I really don't mean that in an arrogant way. I just mean that everybody in teaching believes that they have the answer. And I want to tell you a quick story before I introduce our guest here. Many, many years ago, when I first started coaching at Clemson University, and I was puzzled, I felt like I had many of the answers, even the first or second year, how to propel my teams forward. And as I often do, I quote my very, very wise mother and things she used to tell me. But I used to say, you know, I give them the right solution for this, I give the right solution for that. And last week I gave the 12 Christmas wishes for American tennis, and go back to that show and listen to it. I think it's a doggone good one with Jason Haynes. It was on the 26th. But I used to say to my mother, I said, I've got all these answers for things, but doggone it, it's like the kids don't listen, or it doesn't get across to them. And she said, yeah, well, you're finding out the frustration of teaching. And I said, well, go a little farther. Tell me what you mean. She says, it doesn't matter how much knowledge you have. It doesn't matter the wisdom you may have. It doesn't matter if you have the solutions or you believe everybody in the world would want to be like you if only they knew how. The most critical element you must have in teaching is the bridge. And this is the example she gave, and this is a great one. Compare the talent of the athlete you're working with to maybe a Stradivarius violin. You are as skilled as Mozart was with music. You have all the answers, and you want to play your best sonata or violin concerto or your violin piece, and you're ready to play it. And you're willing to play, and you have this $1.5 million Stradivarius talent, which this violin that's represented by this, we're comparing it to the talent of this athlete. You want to play this beautiful, beautiful music, but he says nothing happens. You can play all day and all night, but nothing happens without the most simple little thing, and that's the bridge, a little piece of balsa wood that fits snugly and uniformly against the box of that violin. And unless your notes that you play on the strings can be conveyed into that box by the use of that bridge, nothing happens. Now, I as you think about this analogy, think about the wisdom in that and how we have so many answers to so many things, and we get so frustrated over so many things as teachers, but that bridge is the most important thing that you have. And it might be as simple as a piece of balsa wood. It might be something that's very complex. But today we have a guest that will give us a very, very significant insight into helping find this bridge. His name is Dr. Jim Poole, and I think I have him on the line. Dr. Poole, are you on the line?
Hey, Chuck. How you doing today?
Oh, great. You are on the line, and welcome from Raleigh, North Carolina there, Dr. Jim Poole, and thank you for being on the show. But let me just say a couple things, Dr. Poole. Dr. Poole, you are also a college athlete, a college tennis player, and you and most of your adult life, you have been a pediatrician, and I think the number is at one time you were servicing over 60,000 people, and you have youngsters in your clinics and daycare centers and learning centers around the state of North Carolina, and actually you have the largest pediatric offices in the state of North Carolina. You currently, though, have gone off on a fantastic and exciting tangent that really relates to what I'm talking about now. You've gone into the area of working with youngsters, a lot of athletes, but also adults, into the field of ADHD, and what fascinated me about it is that you have developed a program that speaks. I always say we speak to the king and all men, not the kid. Speak to the queen, not the little girl. And you speak to the king in these kids by, you've changed the whole mentality of the kids you work with from it being a liability to an asset. Your program's called Fast Brain. And it's interesting, you spell it B-R-A-I-I-N. It's fastbrain.com. And you work with professional athletes, you work with tennis players, you work with football players, you work with adults in the business world. And basically what I love is that you have found a way to bridge something that we've looked at as a liability, and we'll get into this in a second. But it's wonderful to have you with us, and I hate to go to the commercial. I want to get these commercials done if I can, Dr. Poole, and we will be right back. This is American Tennis. I'm Chuck Creasy. We'll be back with Dr. Jim Poole, the founder of Fast Brain, in just a minute.
Alternative Lighting and Power is a renewable energy solutions-focused company with an emphasis in helping athletic facilities. We would like to upgrade your tennis complex to the 21st century. We offer a range of services that will upgrade your tennis complex. We can use our technology to make your facility virtually disappear from the energy grid. We can provide lights, scoreboards, scoring systems, cooling systems, heating systems, camera systems, covered seating areas, wastewater management, and even new buildings. Our company is located in Houston, Texas, but we provide services to all 50 states and internationally. We would love to visit with you about our opportunities. Please contact Ed Love at 832-549-4193 or email at elove@alternativel-p.com. You can also visit our website at www.alternativel-p.com. We are the sunny side of business.
I was in Raleigh, and I was talking about how many kids are taking this Ritalin now and the ADD medicine, and you had me read a book. You said, go read this book called The Edison Gene, like Thomas Edison Gene, and it will change your outlook about ADD. Can you talk to us just a little bit, Dr. Jim, about this? I want to ask just the history of how you transferred over from just your pediatrician business into this, the Fast Brain with ADD.
Well, Chuck, thanks for having me on, and I certainly have always appreciated our discussions through the years, and you always are trying to look at a different way of however something is presented and how our kids are developing, and I've always appreciated your insight. And probably a lot of that discussion has helped form me to always look at other ways that people are looking at things. And knowing that I have an attention issue and ADHD, I have three boys, all great kids. They were all basketball stars in high school at a big 4A school, and one played in a game that sold out the Reynolds Coliseum in Raleigh with 13,000. And the other two, one played tennis at Clemson and one played basketball at Clemson, played tennis a little bit with Chuck there, but for other issues, he ended up playing basketball and was the smallest point guard in the ACC as a walk-on. So what I learned was that three different boys, two ADD, one of them is ADD and obsessive compulsive, and then one's just very analytical. So I have three boys, and they all learn differently. You need to coach them differently. And so as I started looking at kids in my office, I saw that, one, physicians didn't know how to treat this. Secondly, physicians didn't understand it. The other thing that was happening is that doctors have no training at what goes on in a classroom, and no training is what goes on in an athletic field. And I also see that teachers have no training on what goes on in a physician's office, and they're not even allowed to say the diagnosis of ADD. So when we're looking at a group of people, you even throw the psychologists in there, you've got a $1 billion drug industry that is looking at a problem, and yet the drug industry does not talk to the physicians. They market to them to try to sell more. The doctors don't talk to the, and I'm using doctors or providers because we have a lot of pediatric nurse practitioners that are seeing these kids. But the health providers are not talking to the psychologists, and they're not talking to the teachers. And it's kind of a three-ring circus taking care of this poor child. And so when we're looking at medication, the medication is a quick fix. And that is where I really started seeing issues. And I use medication. I think it's wonderfully used when used properly. I think it's horribly used when it's used improperly. But when we're sitting there looking, I had to jump to that issue, Chuck, was a really sharp eighth grade cheerleader who I discussed the issues of ADD, and she definitely had it, and we were putting her on medicine, and she and her mother and I stand up, and she's now crying. I send Mom out of the room, close the door. Obviously, there's something going on. And this beautiful girl looked at me and says, "So something's wrong with me." And I said, "Why do you say that?" And she said, "Because you're giving me a pill." And so kids learn early on that something's wrong with them. They can't accomplish what they wanted to accomplish. People are telling them to sit still. You're out of your seat. Oh, by the way, we're talking kindergarten and first grade. And you have a learning disability because you can't read as well as the girls do. And by the way, developmentally, you don't do that till fifth grade anyway. And now everybody is sitting there going, "Oh, my goodness, what do? I need to get my kid sitting still, and I don't know what to do. I don't know other tricks." And therefore, there comes your medicine. So what I was trying to show you, Chuck, was with that book, The Edison Gene, is just nothing more than getting us to think outside of the box. And people say, "Well, I don't have a box." And that is, why just think of medication? We've got to think of the holistic approach to these kids. And these are the success people. These are the people, this is your Steve Jobs, the Bill Gates, the guy that started Southwest Airlines, Ross Perot, all your top athletes. Just watch, you've been watching football on TV over the holidays. All those players, the quarterbacks. I'm a Clemson guy, so I'm going to say yay Clemson. But if you watch that quarterback go, he had about 2 to 3 seconds to make a decision as five guys were coming down trying to beat his head into the ground. And he had to decide, and he decided 50 different times to throw the ball, and threw it 35 completions at split seconds. You can't be analytical. You've got to be fast. And business is the same way. So that's where I've kind of focused, Chuck. And the reason Brain's Got Two Eyes in it is because I misspelled it when I was trying to get the website, and I loved it, so I trademarked it.
That's a good story. So you misspelled it with your ADD. And look, Dr. Poole, you have spoken internationally and all around the country now about this fast brain being something positive. And I guess that the people who are selling the drugs probably don't like this so much that, you know, that, but that maybe they do, maybe they don't. But the bottom line is that most athletes that I've coached, most tennis players definitely have ADD. Most, like you told me one time, you would never want a quarterback nor a jet pilot who did not have it. And you know, why have we gone to the place? I hit upon political issues a lot, Dr. Poole. You know, I think a lot of this stuff is by design. You know, how we've taken the art, the music, the PE, the physical education, the sports out of the classrooms, even cursive writing. All these things are creative things of the heart. And it's very, very frustrating as a coach to see very unpassionate or kids who lack passion. And we get afraid of the kid who's all over the place. And I go to that kid who is the outlier, because I know that's the one who becomes the champion usually. But is this by design that we're doing this? I mean, I had, when I was a kid, I've had trouble reading my whole life. I've written 5 books, but I haven't read probably 100 in my whole life. And you know, what are we doing this on purpose, this ADD stuff?
Well, it is a real thing. It is definitely a real thing. You get all sides saying that we're way over-diagnosing it. Yes, we are. I don't really – that's why I use the term fast brain. I really – the medical term is ADD or ADHD, and when I first was in training, it was called MBD or minimal brain dysfunction. So how about that?
Well,
so we've come quite a way.
Minimal
brain dysfunction.
That's really a negative connotation.
But this has been around for 100 years.
Right.
And so people are trying to figure out, why can we not sit still in class? So it's not a matter of, I think we have to look at it a different way, Chuck. Coach, if you've got somebody out there who has a big serve, and he's blasting his serves at 135 miles an hour, what type of game do you have him work on? You don't have him work on being a baseline grinder. You've got him serving and volleying. I mean, if he's got that kind of serve, you're wondering, why are you staying back? So you're developing off of what you see. And the good basketball coaches don't have plays. They develop off of what they see. You're at this spot in the court. What do you see? And you play off of that. And there's some tremendous coaches that are out there. The UNC coach is a master at that. And early in the year, if you look back at his teams, they've struggled. And by the end of the year, they all learn and understand the game. Because before that, they were superstars in high school and didn't understand that. The game was just what they did. So now let's change that to the school setting. The school setting is what I see as a child that's out of his seat, running all around, and won't sit still and talking in the back. And I've got 25 or 30 other kids that I got to teach. And what I do know is that Johnny over here got some medicine. He's now sitting quietly. So I'm going to tell this other kid's parents that if they don't go see their doctor, their child is not going to pass the end of grade testing, and they probably aren't going to pass the grade. So if you're a parent, and it does not matter what your socioeconomic status is, if you're a parent, you want the best for your child. The difficulty is, how do I get that? And if I've got a teacher saying that I need to see a doctor because my child isn't sitting still or isn't doing his math right or isn't reading properly, then he obviously is not going to pass, and we got an issue. My thing is that we need to try to figure out and take these kids and not dumb them down for what they don't do well, but figure out what they do well, their strengths, and go with it and bring the other stuff along. My quick story is, go into a first grade class and ask, how many artists do you see? And everybody will raise their hand. Go into a fifth grade class and how many artists are in here? and you might have one that or two that raise their hand, but somebody says, oh, you know, Johnny's a good artist or Sarah's an artist, and that's it. So what happened in there? That's where I want to really, really look at. One last story for that type of thinking is somebody did a study, and they were kindergarten or first graders, and they told the kids, he went into the classroom, and what he was going to prove was that if you don't think you're as good as you are, you really are, and he's going to prove that. So what he did is he said all the slow people on one side of the class, all the fast people on the other. So they eventually get there. He then times them on a 40-yard dash, and then he says, okay, we're going to have the fast one from the fast group, one from the slow group, run against each other. Well, what they didn't know is he knew the times, so he was matching people with the same times together. 95% of the kids that were told they were in the fast group won, which meant everybody else who was in the slow group, they lost. Even though they had the same time, it was the self-fulfilling prophecy of what they thought about themselves. I am trying to take ADD out of what people are thinking about themselves into a positive, so then they succeed, and that's where we're having a phenomenal success. We're getting 42% of our kids making C's, D's, and F's going to AB honor roll, and we've got some kids that have been Olympic athletes and some professional athletes and college stars, and so it works when you get the kid to believe in themselves. It works. And Chuck, you taught me that you cannot give yourself, you cannot give me self-esteem. I've got to earn it. And if I don't earn it, it's shallow. So
right. The question comes up there, and what we do is we pump sunshine to kids all the time, telling them you're great, you're great, you're great. And really, they know down deep that they have to earn that self-esteem through their work. You know, it's self-esteem, I think, is different than confidence. I think confidence you learn your whole life. Self-esteem, I think, is set earlier. But it's more of a security thing. I have always believed, Dr. Poole, with kids, you know, the security in the home. They have both parents in the home. Their parents spend time with them. And it's unconditional love more, I think, than a conditional love. But you're the doctor, the question, I have two quick questions. I want you to tell the story about the tortoise and the hare book that you're doing. But also, what I wanted to ask is, well, what was the deal back 50, 60 years ago? I mean, I remember I went to a parochial school, and those poor nuns, I mean, they would have a 70-year-old nun taking care of 50 kids, and she literally would put us in a row, Dr. Jim, where the smartest kid would be first seat, first desk, and the kids who did the worst were the fifth row, eighth, ninth, and tenth desks. And I still remember who was the eighth, ninth, and tenth desks. And I sort of tried to figure out, and so did some of my buddies, how the second row about halfway down. We didn't want to be with the kids at the top. But the point is, all those kids had ADD, I think. All of us probably did. The nuns ruled with a strict hand. But, you know, is this a recent thing again? Is it just we're aware of it now? Is it just the pharmaceutical company? All of the above? How do you explain that?
Well, I do think that there's been some changes, and we have more kids that are more difficult task sitting in a seat. I do not remember if I had a desk in kindergarten. I know that we have kindergartners here in North Carolina in our area that kindergarten starts and ends at 2:30 in the afternoon, and they have a desk and they've got homework. And so homework has changed. We've got, did you know that over 60% of kids in America at some point in the day are cared for by a grandparent. So we've got a whole different clientele of kids. We're eating differently, so a lot more sugar and fast foods and processed foods than ever before. We're playing video games, which can be good and can be bad. But everything is, I call it the McDonald's philosophy. You know, you go to McDonald's or you go to a fast food place and you're in the drive-in window and they tell you to drive up and they'll bring it out to you in a minute, you get irritated. My goodness, you know, I got to wait 30 seconds. So everything is in this fast-paced world. Look at a commercial of 50 years ago. I mean, they go get milk out of the refrigerator. My gosh, by the time they pour it in today's commercials, they would have already, you know, jumped out of 15 airplanes and whatever else would have happened in the commercial. So the whole world and our brains are speeding up, and that's what's happening. The other problem is the control within the classroom, the lack of control, the inability of the teachers to discipline, the inability of
they're not allowed to because of the, of course, the administrations and everybody afraid of lawsuit. We had the old paddle in the classroom. Probably you did too.
Well, I didn't go to your nun school, and I'm sure you had the paddle. But one thing we did have is we started school at 9 o'clock or 8:45. We had a break at 10:30 and got a little snack. You had lunch at lunchtime. You did some activity outside in the early afternoon, you had a little break and rest period, and then you went home. Now, if you notice that, there are all these breaks during the day. And one of my big ways of treating our fast brain is you only work for 20 minutes at a time, be it on the tennis court or be it on in school or whatever, and then you take a break from it. In a conversation, if you're looking eye to eye, you only have 10 seconds to get somebody's attention. If you can't get it in 10 seconds, you lose them. If you have it in 10, 10 seconds gets you 30. If you don't have them if you lose them at the end of 30, you've lost them. The 30 seconds gets you 90. At the end of 90 seconds, you have lost everybody, meaning everybody thinks of something else. So to sit and listen to a lecture, turn down the lights, or blah, 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 it's very difficult. So if you're a coach, for instance, you've got to figure out, does this child learn by listening, by touching, or by doing and seeing? And we have so much computer skills, and these kids are using their hands and their fingers and their eyes, and everything's fast, 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 fast. They can accomplish that. If you get out into a lecture on a tennis court or a basketball court, oh, man, these guys, 30 seconds, they're gone. So they're not focusing. They also do better if you were to give me a lecture on polar bears or a book to read, or you showed me a National Geographic special on TV or as a movie, which would I remember? Well, everybody said, oh, you remember the movie better. Exactly. Why don't we teach that way? I don't know. Same on a tennis court or basketball. You show them, do videos of them doing well, not poorly. Doing well and saying, this is what I want you to accomplish. Now with iPads and so forth, you can take a video of somebody doing something good, and then you also play music, and we can talk about how music helps.
Want to talk about here. I got to go to commercial in a second, but the answer to the question, yes, there is, ADD is a real thing, then you're saying, but it's not necessarily a bad thing. It depends on how you address it. I'm eager for you to be able to talk about your use of music, diet, exercise, and other things to address it, and not to just completely throw these kids. We want to make it where they think it's an asset. Ever since I learned about this with you, it really helped me feel better. Even I was carrying around that for a long time when I first found out about ADD. I go, oh my gosh, I probably got that stuff. But the switchboard is lighting up as well. We've got some callers that are calling in on hold, and we'll go to those callers. And we'll be right back to Dr. Jim Poole. He'll talk about the treatment of fast brain and using it for an asset, not a liability.
This is Jason Haynes, the UR Tennis Network's Chief Executive Officer. Over the last 14 months, we have undergone a lot of changes here at the UR Tennis Network, and the Nike Tennis Camps have been one of our strongest supporters. They have had a very successful 2012 summer camp season and now are planning for 2013. We would like to thank them for allowing us to be an advertising avenue for their tennis camps. As we leave the summer, we want to encourage you to check out www.ussportcamps.com and start planning your next Nike camp experience. They have locations all over the U.S. for both adults and juniors. The Nike camps are offered in other sports such as golf, volleyball, soccer, swimming, softball, running, water polo, lacrosse, and field hockey. We want to encourage you to consider the Nike camp experience for your tennis needs. These camps are run by successful tennis coaches and offer a fun camp involvement where you learn new skills and make new friends. Be sure to check them out at www.ussportcamps.com or call them at 1-800-NIKE-CAMP and take your game to the next level.
And this is Coach Chuck Creasy back with American Tennis. We have Dr. Jim Poole, who is one of the nation's and internationally one of the experts on ADD, but he calls it fast brain, and he has an interesting way of bringing it. I love it because it empowers. The disclaimers bother me a lot, Dr. Poole, that the kids have nowadays. They're looking for this phantom injury right in the heat of the battle there. A lot of times they'll pull up with quad. We had 51 kids pull out of our back draw at Kalamazoo this year. The kids don't tough things out. And it seems to me that if they can say, oh, my ADD, I didn't have my ADD medicine today, I didn't play well, or this or that, it really, that blows your mind as a coach. You said there's time for medicine, but you don't go there first. You go to other things. Can you talk about the music and the other things that you've used?
Yeah, we can at some point in here talk about medication and athletics. I'm not a proponent of ADD in athletes while they're on the sport court. Occasionally, and we can discuss why, there's a professional athlete that has been in the newspapers who I told him to get off his medication during his baseball player. And he was wanting to know why. And I said, it'll slow down your bat speed, actually. And it did. And he went off of it. And the rest was history with him. He just did phenomenal. So what I started looking at was trying to figure out what are other ways that athletes can relax. And, you know, and right brain, left brain, the brain is very complicated. So put in simplistic terms, the left side of the brain is our analytical side. Am I holding the club right? Am I swinging right? Am I taking it back just right? And the right side of the brain is just saying, hit the daggum thing. What are you worried about? And if you can get the right side and the left side up to an even keel, then you can really perform at a higher level. And in doing that, I found that music actually will increase that ability of that right brain to relax the left brain, because the left brain is just overshadowing everything, and we're becoming too analytical. There's a good friend of mine.
Analysis, I call it all the time as coach, yeah.
Yes, and another, there's a great, I can't pronounce his long last name, but he has a book called Flow, and everything is a flow. And somebody that you know very well, Cliff Skakel, who played professional tennis for a while, and he just believes, as he's teaching, just it's the flow. Why are you worried about hitting the ball? Everything is a flow. And
right, that's how that inner game of tennis was wired and was such a hit. So you use music. Tell us about, is it any kind of music? Or tell us about the music. I mean, what do you do?
All right. Well, first of all, music's only been around for about 10,000-plus years. We use it in the preschool, but nobody would have a preschool session unless you had music and the kids were playing around. And I've always, you know, in medicine, we always want to know where the study is. And we all took tests, and we all continue to take tests in a quiet classroom. And I just asked, where's the study? There isn't one. I studied playing music, taking tests, and I have seen a 38% improvement in test scores by playing music in the classroom. And in 85%
rap music, rock music, disco music, beach music, what kind of music? Is there a difference?
Upbeat. It needs to just be upbeat, fun music. I have found if it's music that the kids are more, they identify the music, it's better. The only time not to use music is rap, because the beat of rap and the words of rap happen at different moments, and it hits one side of the brain and the other, and the brain's fighting. So you can't use rap. And you don't want it loud, and I don't use earphones because it's like a cell phone. You can't concentrate. And so you want the music across the room. But the music has really improved. And so in sports, I have people play a song in their head when they're going up to bat, when they're getting ready to go up to swim, when they're getting ready to serve, receive. You start playing the song in your head, and that gets your body totally relaxed and back into this flow that we were just talking about. So it,
you
it
said
does
one time that, like, country was good, beach music, you know, I love beach music, you know, that,
right.
That down in South Carolina, that was good stuff. It's happy and flowing, right? But not rap. I wanted you to get the point out there, because these kids listen. I call it, sorry, I can do this on the computer, but rap crap. You know, and it's because it's disjointed. It's not because of anything else. But I used to tell my guys wanted to play rap on the van rides, Coach Poole, and I used to say, look, guys, if you can't hum it or sing it to somebody else, it is not a song. You've got to have a melody. So anyhow, I'm glad to know there's some clinical proof to that. We've got a caller on cue here for a long time. Let's see if he wants to ask a question. I know we've got some calling in. But area code 864-979, would you like to talk to Coach Dr. Jim Poole?
8979-8697. It's me, Chuck. It's Mama Beth.
Oh, hi. Okay, that's Mama Beth. Mama Beth, it is wonderful to. How are you this morning? This is my wonderful, wonderful, wonderful grandmother-in-law, my wife's grandmother. Mama Beth, it is wonderful to talk to you. And I tell the whole world, I was explaining to my daughters the other day that my father used to say, always go into the home, look at the mother and the grandmother if you can. And before you ask that woman to marry you, they will probably turn out like them. And I said, you have the best role models in the world. So I wanted the whole world to know that, Mama Beth. So it's good to hear your voice. But
a wonderful program. I'm enjoying it. Go ahead with it.
Good. Do you have any questions for Dr. Poole? I know we have a couple other here that are. Did you have any questions?
I was interested in how music goes along with ADD. I want to hear some more about that.
Okay, and I wanted to ask Dr. Poole that she was a teacher for many, many years. So,
well, great. It's certainly nice to hear you, and you certainly have a wonderful daughter, and it's a pleasure to have heard your voice. Can't wait to meet you in person. Music is innate in our bodies and our brain, and it's from way back in developmental times. We love the music. They did what's called a functional MRI scan and a PET scan. It looks for blood flow in areas of the brain that light up with increased blood flow, and figuring that those areas of the brain's using more blood flow and more oxygen because it's these neurons are firing off. They put 11 people in, this is done in Stanford, they put 11 people in an MRI scanner, and they found that three areas lit up. The prefrontal cortex is where we remember things, our amygdala, which is our emotional area, that everything we learn goes through that amygdala area first, and our cerebellum, which also is involved with learning. And I know that medicine works on three areas of the brain. It works on the prefrontal cortex, the amygdala, and the cerebellum. So right then and there, if you could figure out how to relax the anxiety that an athlete has with the anxiety that somebody has taking a test and the ability to improve learning, then there you go. We'll go back to the teachers. Does a four-year-old know their ABCs? No. Do they know the song? Yep, they know ABC. They know their ABC song. Why? Because it's inherent. If you're trying to learn vocabulary, do it. Do a music and that kind of thing. So it helps the brain learn. It also helps the brain relax while you're learning. And all you have to do is talk to people, adults. Yes, I played music at work. I played music when I was in college. But we have this whole idea that we're supposed to be quiet, and it's not true. The reason music at work is now just getting back in the workplace is because music came along, and that was the elevator music. And what did it do? It puts us all to sleep. So music does have a calming and sleeping effect, but it also can have an upbeat effect.
Dr. Jim, this is an interesting thing. I after I heard one of your talks, our kids who are very, very left brain, in other words, are very regimented. They're melancholic personalities where they do everything by the book and they're afraid of making mistakes. I started getting some of them to try to listen to more happy music. You said like the Happy Feet music and things before they play. And, you know, again, it's to balance out. So you don't do paralysis by analysis. A coach loves that at practice, by the way. They love the left brain person at practice, but on game day, you do not want the left brain overriding the right brain. Is that correct? On game day, you want that right brain going full force, just seeing the little things and being unafraid to compete. Could you talk about that just briefly?
Well, we go with how the brain learns. Let's just go with how the brain sees things, because it's all how we see. It's all in our vision. Let's look at anybody that juggles. If you'll throw somebody, and you ought to do this, all those of you that are coaches and even players, take a ball, toss it up, one ball, and with your right hand, try to go to that ball as fast as you can and do not drop it. And you'll notice how firm your wrist gets and how firm your hand gets. Now go to juggling, and do you look at that ball? No. You throw it up, and your hand and your eye-hand coordination, your hand knows where to go, and your hand is relaxed. If your hand is stiff, you can't juggle. And so all of a sudden, you have this softness of hands, and the eye and the brain knows what to do. Many of you have seen the paragraph where they're missing all the vowels, and yet you can read it perfectly. Why? The brain fills it in. We don't see all that. It's what we don't see is what we see. And if you're sitting there trying to stare at something to hit it in one particular spot, you've got to pull on all this information that your brain has got to tell the muscles to do. Rather than if you're in the flow and do it naturally, your body is going to do it naturally. Your arm's going to come through it naturally. And I worry about all the type of training that's going on that's unnatural. Instead of just letting somebody swing, just let them swing. When you watch the pros, what do they do? At a high level, they're just swinging through it. They're not real stiff and trying to hit the ball. It's the ball gets in the way. Same with a golfer. The top golfers, they don't hit at the ball. It looks like they do, but the ball is getting in the way of their club. And you hear it sweeping through or swing down, but they're not hitting at something. It's how this whole idea of how the brain flows, what the brain sees, and your whole idea of your paralysis by analysis is really the fear of failure. And you have fear of failure by the child. And we go back to the first graders that raised their hand. They're all artists. You know why? Because they're not afraid of failure. It's only after us parents get involved that they lose in fear of failure. We come off, how many times all of us have been at tennis matches and we see a parent berating or their head down. I remember one of the best matches I ever played, I lost. And I still remember that match, and it was great. And afterwards we were given high fives at what a great match that was, rather than I can't believe you lost. We have got to take that away. I talked with a at a at one years ago, I talked with Clemson University, their tennis, and they were girls were crying because nobody was watching them and caring for them on the court, and it was all internalized and so forth and so on. And then we had to get them focused on what their focus was, and the focus was not on beating University of Georgia tomorrow. It was to make the Final Four. So that means every bit of practice, everything you do is to get better to make the Final Four. Once they relaxed and believed in that, started playing the music, they made the Final Four 2 years in a row, matter of fact. So it's a whole concept of trying to get away from you got to win today. Years ago, I spoke down at Saddlebrook, and I asked the parents there, when do you want your child to be good? And they're all spending $40,000 to $60,000 a year. Now, got to be now. And I go,
yesterday.
Well, okay, fine. It can't be. I said, Sampras was not good, Eric, when he was 12,
right.
14, or 18.
Right. And
neither
and
was
that's a whole other issue, Dr. Poole, about how we're raising our kids to go after the product instead of the process. And I again, I talked recently about the three drugs we need that tennis, playing tennis, gives you. Like I play tennis to get my drugs, the dopamine, the enjoyment of hitting the ball, the feel you get from the brain, from just like playing music, if you're really feeling the ball, then the, of course, endorphins from the training and then the adrenaline from competing, but that's a different talk. I wanted to do two things here. We've got about 8 or 9 minutes, and Dr. Ray Brown was here holding, but he's not on the line right now. And he's one of the most brilliant men out there in tennis, and I know he had some questions. I used to, many, many years ago, and I'll give you the context here. I was trying to learn how to play golf, and I learned late in life, and I went to the pro, and I said, hey, do you think I could be a scratch golfer? He said to me, Coach, he says, you just started a little bit late to not think about your swing when you're standing over the club, the ball. And I thought about that a lot, and I came up with these four different levels, Dr. Poole, see if you think this makes sense, of learning anything. You're first, you're unconsciously incompetent. You don't know what you can't do. You know, you just unconsciously. Then you become consciously incompetent. You say, oh, wow, I can't do this. I figured out that I can't do this. Then you become consciously competent. You can do it, but you'd have to think about it. And that's where I think I got with my golf. I could do it, but I had to think about it, and that's what the pro was saying. But ultimately, you want to be unconsciously competent, where you do it automatic, based with your right brain kicking in and taking over. And I want, my political thing here is I wanted to say that we do so many things politically with tennis, and whether it's USTA, the ITF, the ITA, or any of these organizations, NCAA, with computers, we've allowed paralysis by analysis on steroids. So we got kids so uptight and coaches so uptight, nobody wants to make mistakes, and we don't have that right brain kicked in. Question I wanted to ask you real quick here, Dr. Poole, besides music, where do you go other than music? You said you had other ways before you go to drugs.
Well, first is you get the kid to believe in themselves, and I use tricks and mind tricks in the office to prove that they can, that their brain is quick and sharp, and they've got a great memory. Once I've done, and it's fast, and when I do that, we're not teaching correctly. Learning is speed. It's not standing there and sitting there reading for an hour. It's number of repetitions. Each time, if you go over something four times, your brain cell lays down myelin, and those brain cells will go 100 times faster. And you've got to do it correctly. So when you're doing practicing, you practice correctly, and it lays down proper myelin. Also lays down proper thought process. So we teach speed reading. We teach proper nutrition, because if I love my sugar, people say, well, sugar's bad for you. Yeah, sugar's bad for you. Give me my Mountain Dew. I'm good for 30 minutes. At the end of 30 minutes, and I think my Mountain Dew is running out on this talk. No, I'm just kidding. But you give me 30 minutes, but what happens at the end of 30 minutes after a sugar? You crash. So you crash on the tennis court. And we teach that for studying, too. You need to have the proper carbs If you're lifting weights, you do need extra protein. You've got to have those proper complicated carbohydrates so that you're doing, but you also got to be able to draw the carbs when you're playing. But staying away from the real high sugar things. A lot of water and drinking water, same with learning and studying. We play the music. You do the exercise again after 20 minutes of study. You get up and walk around. You go exercise because exercise increases the norepinephrine and dopamine for studying. Also, exercise increases serotonin, so you start feeling better about yourself, the endorphins you were talking about. So we definitely use those things. You've got to have proper sleep. If you're not sleeping well, you're exhausted, and one of the worst things that's happened right now is kids have the cell phones in their room, and they text all night long, so they do not get a good sleep. So that's a real issue over time. And then once you start seeing and believing in success, it's amazing when I've got African-American lineman male sitting in my office, a senior in high school, in tears, with all of a sudden he's able to accomplish his schoolwork and play sports because of that. It is a real thrill, and that's why we've been having the tremendous success we've been having, is we teach them to, once they believe in themselves, and yes, the family is been kind of blown apart in the United States, but you can be a mentor to these kids, especially as coaches. Not give it to them, have them earn it, and then praise them for it, and then tell them. And the fast brain individual, that fear of failure, if you chastise them in public, they will fall apart. You take them in the back room, you can chastise them all you want, point out two good things, and in public praise them for the thing they did. They'll die for you, and they'll make it happen. So it's,
right, and
this
should be being done by the father, usually, for the boy in the home, and the mother or the daughter in the home. And there's a great book out there for you folks that read a lot, and this is one of the books that I have read a couple times. It's called Wild at Heart, and it's a fantastic book. It's about the key to unleashing a boy's soul and his heart, so that he can be what he was intended to, that God intended him to be, not passive, not complacent, not wimpish, not all these things that we have done. I think we have emasculated our males, Dr. Poole, and we are not allowing our women to be feminine as well. This is completely different, but it's along the same topic. It got me thinking about that because you said that one of the first things you do besides music, it's self-affirmations, and it's about trying to help their confidence and their esteem. And, boy, I tell you, we have a mess. I heard George Will give a great speech the other day on C-SPAN. He was speaking at St. Louis University December 6th. Look it up, folks, if you want to hear a fantastic talk. He said the greatest danger we have in our society is that 44% of all races, creeds, and economic groups are now being raised in one-parent homes without the parent. We only got about a minute here or so, Dr. I wanted to thank you for being on, and your website is fastbrain.com, www.fastbrain.com. Dr. Poole, this is a prelude to your radio show. You're going to have a radio show coming up. What's the name of your radio show, Dr. Poole?
Well, it'll be Fast Brain.
And everybody,
Fast Brain, we'll be doing it. Yep, and then we'll be doing it on Wednesdays. But I think we'll be starting in 2 weeks. But I want you to, I want to.
Made in America, born in a heartland, raised up a family. He got the red, white, blue, flying high on the farm. Semper Fi tattooed on his Flintstones. Spent a little more in the store for a tag in the back of this USA. Won't buy nothing that he can't fix. With WD-40 and a Craftsman wrench, he ain't prejudiced. He's just made in America.
for coming on the show. God bless you.
Thank you, sir. Appreciate it much.
Okay, and this is Chuck Creasy. I want to remind you, you are in the process of winning or losing every day of your life, and it has very little to do with a win or a loss. God bless you. Thank you for teaching, and talk to you next week with American Tennis.
Opinions stated by various contributors to UR10's radio and its programming are not to be considered as endorsed by the UR10's network. Visitors are urged to use their own discernment to draw their own conclusions. All information, products, services, and use of this website is for personal use only. UR10's radio does not confirm nor deny the validity or accuracy of the information contained within the website. Any services or products provided by UR10's radio and its hosts or contributors should be used solely for entertainment and enjoyment. We emphasize the importance of keeping an open mind and not construing the data, products, and/or services as factual.